Hello, everyone, and welcome to this show. And today's guest, we've got Craig Powell. How are you going, Craig?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking the time to come on. It's muchly appreciated.
My pleasure, mate. It's great. Yeah, I love having a chat. So, yeah, it'll be good to talk to you.
Now, you're the founder, if I'm correct, of WSPR Paranormal Investigations. Now, that's Western Sydney Paranormal Research, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. Everyone just calls us Whisper, you know? So, we're probably more well known for the name Whisper more than anything else.
Cool. Now, it's great. We cover a lot of different things on the show, from UFOs to paranormal to ancient archaeology and all things. It's been great to get an Australian person on here who's part of an Australian group to get some of the stuff that's going on around the world, share a bit of Australia's history. Now, yeah. From what I read, your first experience happened when you were 16 at your sister's home. Is that right? You saw your first apparition?
Yeah, that's right. You have done your research, mate. Well done, yeah. I was 16 years old when I had my very first encounter. Well, the first encounter I think I can remember of something that was paranormal or supernatural. And it changed my life. It sent a journey down the rabbit hole, I guess you could say. And I haven't really looked back since. But the experience I had was so vivid, so clear, that it kind of flipped my life upside down, if you know what I mean. Everything that you kind of think you know or you think you believe just in a split second just absolutely crumbles in on you. And that's what my first experience was when I was 16. And to give you a bit of a background story of it, I was babysitting my infant nephew. He was only newly born, and I was giving my sister and my brother-in-law a night off. They could head off and have tea or go watch a movie or do something like that. So it was the middle of winter. I remember it vividly because it was quite cold outside, and it got to the point that he was asleep before I even arrived. So my sister said, "Look, Craig, it's going to be a really easy night. He's fast asleep in his cot, so kick back, watch the TV. I doubt if he'll even wake up." And he didn't the whole time. So it was a really easy evening up until I decided I would go and make myself a nice hot cup of chocolate in the kitchen. And in their kitchen, it's down one end of the house, and from the kitchen runs a really long hallway. And that hallway ran all the way to the other end of the house. And it just so happened to be that at the end of the hallway was the baby's nursery, where he was fast asleep. So I'm there, I'm making this hot cup of chocolate, and I saw something move out of the corner of my eye. And as I've turned to have a look, I saw someone walk into the baby's room. And it was just for the briefest of seconds, but I vividly saw the back of a person disappear into the darkness into the baby's room. So, you know, I'm 16 years old. I'm thinking I'm all tough and, you know, ready to rumble and do all this sort of stuff. And thinking that there was an intruder in the house, I ran down that hallway as quickly as I could. And to my utter surprise, found nobody in the baby's nursery. And that's when I started questioning myself, because I knew I'd seen something, but I wasn't really sure. Well, maybe it wasn't a person. Maybe, you know, it was an animal or something like that. So I remember getting on the phone to my sister and saying, you know, I've seen someone in the house. I'm pretty sure I saw them go into the baby's nursery. He's fine. There's nothing wrong. So she told me to go and check all the windows and doors, and which I did. Everything was all locked up. And the only way for someone to enter the house and get down to the end of the house would have been to walk past me in the kitchen, which nobody did. So went back, started finishing making my hot cup of chocolate, getting a little bit freaked out that this station is coming around. And as I'm just about to finish making it, I saw the movement. I turned and I looked and I saw a woman in a long dress. It wasn't white. It was more a bluey kind of tinge. And she was walking very slowly down the hallway. And I could see her like I'm just seeing a normal everyday person. It was solid. It wasn't your Hollywood ghost type of see-through or smoky or anything like that. It was just a solid person. And one of the things I remember most vividly about that is I could hear the fabric of the dress as she walked down the hall. There was a very distinct sound to it as she walked down. And I never saw the front of this lady, but I only saw the back, and I remember her hair was up in a big bun type thing, and sure enough, she walked into the baby's nursery. And as soon as I saw her, I knew something wasn't right. I guess there's, you know, people talk about that sixth sense that you get, and it was just, you know, every fiber of my being was telling me that this wasn't a natural phenomenon. This isn't actually someone that's in the house, you know. I'm seeing something not of this world or something of another dimension, and I stood there frozen. I could not move. I could not move. And I'm fighting, you know, all the urges in me are saying, you need to go down there and get the baby, and my body just could not physically move. It got to the point where I couldn't, very sheepishly, I moved down the hallway, and there was no one in there, obviously. Collected the baby, kept him with me in the lounge room, and waited, you know, until my sister got home. And that was one of the last times I ever visited the place. They all thought I was, you know, smoking stuff and, you know, on the drugs and, you know, as people usually do. But in the weeks that followed that, they started having their own experiences. And my brother-in-law, who was a very, very big skeptic at the time and used to laugh at me over my story that I had, he started having things starting to happen. You know, the baby's toys would go off in the middle of the night. So things like, you know, he'd remove the batteries, and sure enough, minutes later, without the batteries, the toys would be going off again. Kettles would boil with no, you know, without being plugged into the socket. Fridges would open and close. And it got to the point where they ended up leaving. So that was my very first experience with it, and that's what made me really start to pick up books and read about it. Because no one believed me, so I was absolutely determined to prove them wrong, that there was something in the house. How do I go about actually proving it? Can I take photos of it? Can I get a video camera and film it? What can I do? So that's kind of what led me down the path that I'm on today. And so happened that years later, I met my beautiful wife, who just so happened to be in exactly the same predicament as me and having life-changing experiences when she was younger. She grew up in India and lived in some of the most haunted houses I've ever heard of. So, I met my soulmate in terms of, you know, the paranormal and doing all that sort of stuff, you know. So
it's funny that
together with her, we founded Whisper.
No, but that's awesome. I've recently met my soulmate, and I'll tell you what, it's been the same sort of journey. It's funny when you come across this. Going back to the experiences, it sounded like it was more of like later on when you found out other people were having experiences, it sounded like it was an intelligent haunting where you've got, just for the viewers and listeners, there's two types that a lot of people go by in terms of residual, which is basically the same activity over and over. It wouldn't matter if you were there or not. It's just going to be the same activity. And then you've got intelligent, where it can interact. And because you're talking about specific objects, the toys, the doors being open, the fridge. So these are things that wouldn't normally be there or in the same places. So it points That's towards right. an intelligent type haunting.
Yeah, looking back now, I can actually see, and I can, you know, I can see what type of haunting was going on at the time. And you know, when I first looked back on it and I started going over it, I'm thinking, well, I just saw her walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all she does. Maybe all she does is
exactly.
just walk down the hallway. And the really strange thing was, when my sister was pregnant, I was over there helping them turn the room into the baby's nursery. So there was this really horrible wood paneling on the wall. So we stripped all of that off. And then underneath the wood paneling was wallpaper. So we stripped the wallpaper off. The bizarre thing is, they picked a particular type of paint. They didn't know whether they were going to have a boy or a girl. So they got this greenish sort of coloured paint. And wouldn't you know, the coloured paint that they had picked was exactly the same colour that was underneath the wood paneling and wallpaper. Exactly the same colour, you know.
I've heard of weird stuff like this over and over. Even when I spoke to Reg, who runs Monte Cristo, there's sort of a psychic sort of connection type thing with this, where later you'll look at things and they coincide or would be going back to how the place originally was in some way, which is important you're bringing up this because it's theorised, and I've experienced it at places when I've investigated, if you're doing renovations or changing the place, it can sometimes beef up activity, can't it?
It's exactly right, and that's one of the questions we ask. So if someone should get in contact with us and they're having issues with things that are going bump in the night, that will be one of the first questions we ask them. Have you recently undergone any renovations within the home at all? Because you go through documented reports of people's investigations and even haunting phenomena, and there's a high percentage of people that have done renovations or are undergoing renovations that do happen to trigger some sort of haunting type phenomena.
Definitely, it's an important question to ask. Now, you guys, you've got a part on your website where people can request an investigation. I guess if it's warranted enough through you asking questions and it sort of ticks all the right boxes. Just like myself, when I have done this, it's all off our own back in terms of the time, the driving. You know, we're taking time off our family life and work life and everything. And we do, like especially you guys, you do what you do for the love of it and to find out what's going on. You know, there's the ever lingering what's going on question. How many people are a part of your crew that you've got?
I think there's around about 9 or 10 of us at the moment. Mm-hmm. So we've got quite a big crew in terms of, paranormal teams. I know, there's some crews out there that have quite large numbers like we do. And then you have the really small numbered groups as well. We've gone with a larger group. There's several reasons why we've done that. Obviously, you can't be it's hard to be an expert in everything, mm-hmm. okay? Or it's hard to kind of cover everything. So, for myself, I'd find it very hard to actually put together the productions we're doing, organized investigations, as well as trying to find the time to speak to people, head out to their homes to do, site inspections. So we've got quite a large group so that we can cover all of those situations and tasks within the team. And also, I guess it helps because, we all do work, full-time jobs. So if some of us aren't available one night when we need to go out there, there's going to be a good majority of us that are. So there's always someone that is available when we need it to head out and help people. So that's why we've gone with the larger crew in this particular instance anyway. Doesn't mean to say that we always use them. We might get someone might call us, lives in a one-bedroom flat. So it's going to be a bit insane if we take 10 of us out there investigate it, But we've got the numbers there to cover every sort of situation.
Well, definitely, like if you did an asylum or a hospital, that's enough. If you've got a big home, that's enough. Even a smaller home, you could sort of swap it and take turns, 3 or 4 people in a house at a time to minimise the contamination in EVPs and that type of thing, which just for those watching, the electronic voice phenomena, which is where there's sometimes audio picked up on a digital recording or tape recording that wasn't heard at the same time when whatever is recorded. So there's different types of things. In going into that, what types of equipment, like I say the best equipment is our eyes and our own mind, but when it comes to, equipment on top of that, what's some of the stuff do you guys use in terms of helping out with the investigation to help solidify and validate some of the evidence?
That's a good question. And I've got to say, I totally agree with your statement there about your own self being the best piece of equipment that you can have on an investigation. It took me a long time to trust my own senses and instincts. But now, everyone has some sort of psychic abilities, and it's just, some people have that ability to use it or know how to use it, while some of us, don't know how to use it. And, for me now and for most of the crew, we can walk into a place and you get those feelings straight away, So being able to listen to your body and listen to your instincts is a big part of it. So we're really, I think, as a team, we're really tuned into that at the moment. So totally agree with your statement there. Other than that, we use, your stock standard gear that you would find in any ghost hunters equipment bag. So everything from EMF detectors, voice recorders for EVPs, you know, even your basic stuff, torches, notepads, string lights, spirit levels, all of those types of things. We use motion sensors as well. We use laser grids. We have night vision cameras. You name it. We use it and we utilize it. If there's a piece of equipment out there that we think may be able to help us, I'm just going to, you know, because a lot of times people go, oh, that's never going to work. What's that going to do? I'm all about trying it. Why not? Let's give it a go. Let's take it out into the field and test it and see how we go. So, you know, people can jump on the website and they can have a look at quite a lot of the equipment that we use. Look, we went to Victoria recently to do a filming and filmed some investigations we were doing down there. And I kid you not, we filled a trailer. We filled a trailer with just the equipment.
Yep.
You know, so... There's a lot of it. There's a lot of it. Some technical, some not so technical.
Well, people can go to the website www.westsydneyparanormal.org and there's a heap there from media stuff to some of the episodes that you've done, short videos. There's EVPs there and other things that you've caught on investigations. So this is where somebody like yourself in your group, you can actually point people to go and look and see what some of the stuff you've done. Yeah. I've looked at some of it. It's fantastic what you guys are doing. The other thing to point out too, which we did talk about before the show, the biggest thing that I get off to, whether it's experiences having abduction or UFO type things or paranormal hauntings, is just being able to see when you get a bit of evidence or help them out. It really touches you because we both know what it's like when you're going through something and there's no one to turn to. Well, that's what you think when you start having these experiences. So that's really the payoff there is seeing how people are helped or how they open up to expand over this. Where did things go in time for you guys to lead you to do what you're doing? Like, because that's what it is. It's helping other people and you're doing it out of your own money, out of driving, out of your own time. What's some of the places and if you can talk about that this, you know, you've enjoyed as well when doing this?
Well, to start off for us, like you spoke of there, it was about help and assistance, okay? So we really pride ourselves in being able to conduct a private home investigation to a very high level to, I think, you know, without blowing our trumpets, being one of the best crews in the country to actually be able to perform home investigations because... You know, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with individuals, you're dealing with families that are sometimes on the brink, they're on the edge, they've had it up to here, they're experiencing stuff they don't understand, they don't know who else to turn to, you can't ring the police, you know, where do you go, what do you do? And that is a position that Nick and I found ourselves in and a while ago, which led us actually into creating Whisper. And being of that service. Well, you don't know who to call or you don't know who to contact. Here we are. Let's try and help you out. And it all started a few years ago now when Nikki, my partner, and I were in a major accident. And Nick had an NDE experience. So I nearly lost her. And... she was in hospital for a very long time. I got her out of it pretty unscathed, but she was in hospital for a great period of time. The injuries I received kind of put me out of action for a little bit, but I was able to be at home. So my parents were able to come and stay with me at home and look after, help me look after the kids. We had two boys. We've got two boys, so... They helped me look after the children because I wasn't able to be on my feet or run around or do anything like that at the time. The house we were in at the time, we kind of had an idea that we may have had unseen visitors or guests in there. The boys, the children would talk about things and all of that sort of stuff. We could hear things going on at night, but we were never 100% sure. We had a fair idea that there may be something going on, but... it wasn't your full-blown haunted house type thing. But when Nick was in hospital and my parents stayed with me, that completely changed. The whole energy of the house just shifted. It just absolutely flipped. And I don't know whether it was because the spirits of the house didn't understand what was going on, whether it was my energy after the accident, whether it was the kids not knowing if mum was going to be okay, or I don't know what it was, but the whole energy of that place just shifted and things started to happen like you wouldn't believe. And my parents, who were very skeptical themselves, started having very, very intense experiences. So I wouldn't sleep in my bed when Nikki was in hospital, couldn't do it. So even if she's not home now, I don't like sleeping in there by myself. So just one of those things. But they would sleep in my bed. My parents would sleep in our bed, and I'd just sleep on the lounge. And it all started one night with the bed shaking, you know, your classic poltergeist type thing, the bed shaking. And I remember them getting up one night, thinking, you know, what the hell's going on and this and that. And I'm just like, don't worry about it, it's fine. What's going on? And little things would happen now and then, and it all ended for them one day when my mother put some washing on. They decided they'd go out and get some groceries, and they came back and they're bringing all the groceries inside the house. And as they're putting it in the kitchen, they could hear splotch, 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 splotch all through the house. And my parents are like, what the hell is going on? And when they went to investigate, all of the washing, the wet washing, had been taken out of the washing machine and had just been strewn all through the house. Well, that was it for my mother. She didn't want to stay there again. She was going home. And it was like, what do I do? I've experienced stuff, but I don't know what to do. I don't know who to call. I don't know who to ask for help. So that's where it all started from us, because, we'd have friends that would ask us questions about, I think I saw this one day, or we're hearing this and that, and we're kind of finding that we had answers for it, or, you know, we might be able to help in some sort of way. And the crux of the story being out of our own experiences and not knowing who to call or who to ask for help is how West Sydney Paranormal Research was kind of formed.
In saying that, it's good because looking at your website, you talk about how you're into debunking as well, because I've even been to places where, whether it's plumbing, whether it's the type of the way the wind works in some houses, we've got to be grounded here in what we do, and it sounds like you guys are from what I've seen. And like I've said to a lot of people, even with what I've captured with crafts and whatnot, I use trackers and everything else, but if you're left with something you can't explain in terms of to the average Joe, like I've got a psychic component with a lot of my experiences, which I'm glad you brought up, because even people like Grant and Jason from Ghost Hunters, they don't talk about it much publicly, but if you read their books, they talk about how they've had very much psychic stuff go on, and they use that in the investigation, though they don't talk about it on the show, which is very important because it is our own best tool. But in saying that, we can't get away with the bloody fairies. We've got to be grounded and conduct ourselves in a proper way, and especially with being in homes, I've seen where people have just completely freaked out from an object being moved or whatever, which is not good if the person who owns the home is around, because you're trying to reassure them there's not much to worry about, you know, things like that. But in seeing how you conduct yourself with the way the website and everything is set up, that is very good to see that there's a group that's very grounded in how you conduct that, which is important. What's some of the common stuff with houses that you've come across that where you've gone, look, I can understand why they thought it was paranormal, but then you've come across to find out it's something else. What's some of them things?
Really, really simple stuff sometimes. Like there was one house in particular where the entire roof in this one room was just filled with mold. It was just moldy like you wouldn't believe. Now, the owners put it down to some type of demonic infestation, because even, you know, the plants outside weren't growing. They couldn't grow any plants at all. We don't know what's going on. And objects would just go missing. You know, knickknacks, little bits and pieces, figurines in the house would just up and disappear. Sounds really interesting. Okay, let's see what we can do to help, you know. Things like plants not being able to grow in a backyard. Well, have you got a dog? Well, yes, we do. Excellent. Where does the dog wee or go to the toilet? sure enough, it's we in the exact place where they can't grow plants, you know. So that's where we get in real experts like gardeners to come in, you know. Well, you know, they're not going to grow plants in this particular area because it's in a shade, so they're going to need some sort of ferns or something if they want to grow it. Also, the dog's doing a lot of its business there. Plants aren't going to grow where the dog's doing that. Also, they've got these palm trees which are sucking 1,000 litres of water every day.
Yeah.
No wonder the plants in the grass won't grow. You know, the room was in the dark all the time. It was never open to sunlight or anything. And we also found that that end of the house, so we got a builder in to have a look, and that end of the house was on a really big lean, you know. So water would come, the rain would go into the gutter, and because it was on such a big lean, it would just run into the roof, into the house, which was causing all the mold up on top. But we're getting really sick all the time. Well, you're probably getting sick because you're breathing in all that mold all the time, you know. We'll explain why everything's going missing. After extensive interviews with them, they would take on boarders. And these boarders would, you know, bless them, they were trying to help people that were coming off addictions and all of that sort of stuff. You know, and the boarders would come, they'd stay for a few weeks, they'd go, and then all of a sudden there's all these little bits and pieces that have gone missing, you know? It's just little things like that. And, you know, for us to have some type of credibility in the field, it's really important that you cross off everything that could be normal before you start looking at anything that is paranormal, you know? I mean, And going on to skeptics as well, Peter, it's interesting because some of the biggest skeptics we have ever met, and Nick and I have stood up in front of the Skeptic Society and we've done a talk, they have some of the best ghost stories you will ever hear.
Well, that's the thing. I don't actually have a problem with skeptics. What I've got a problem with is debunkers, because, and some skeptics actually give the real skeptics a bad name, because a skeptic is somebody that will look at both sides of the argument and the evidence.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. A real skeptic will do that. A real skeptic will look at both sides. And, you know, it's the closed-minded ones where something would happen in front of them and it's still not good enough. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, some of the biggest skeptics we've ever met have some of the best ghost stories we've ever heard, you know. So... Everyone's got a story.
Well, that's what I've said before a lot of time on the show. You pull people aside and somebody's, whether it's a haunting or apparition or they've seen weird lights, or everyone's had something happen if they really sit down and think about it and if they're willing to admit it.
Yeah.
What's some of the investigations or places you've been with your team, whether it's jails or asylums or a cool house? You don't have to name the locations, because obviously, like myself, with some of the stuff I've done, I've had to withhold the location.
Sure.
Because we don't want people screwing it up or whatever for people's homes. So it's totally understandable if you can't go into that. But what's some of the, if you can name the locations, which are, you know, there are a lot of places, you know, we've got Melbourne Jail here and the homesteads at Point Cook and whatnot, which have got investigations, but... You know, what's some of the cool places that you've been to where you've been shook up, you've got some good evidence, you've seen something trippy? Can you go into some of that?
Yeah, there's a couple that come to mind. I think one of the first places we ever fell in love with in terms of paranormal investigations is Maitland Jail in Newcastle, in New South Wales. We got evidence there which was so in your face that it was picked up by the television production called My Ghost Story, who actually flew Nikki and myself over to the States to actually chat about it on their show. Maitland Jail, for us, it's Nikki always calls it hauntingly beautiful. It's a hauntingly beautiful place, and it's just, it's like they just up. It's just like that up and left yesterday. It's one of those places where it just looks like they've just gone, you know?
I was actually there last year at last year's Paracon. I went there to make
it. All right. What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's some stuff go down there, definitely. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people can see our investigations at Maitland Jail on the website, so they can check it out and they can see some of the things that happened to the crew during our time. It's a funny place because some nights it is absolutely pumping and stuff is happening all the time, And then you might go again, and it's just quiet. It's, you can just curl up. So us, it's kind of like our second home. It's just to go to really learn our trade, I guess you can say that. And it's been good to us. So I would say, it's up there for us. And then secondly, I would have to say Crocodile Island in Sydney Harbour.
And we're back. There was just a bit of a connection problem there between Melbourne and Sydney, but we'll get on with it now. You were talking about Maitland Jail. What's another place in Sydney? You're talking about a specific island there that you've conducted an investigation at, or a few.
It's Cockatoo Island, which you'll find in Sydney Harbour. And we were contacted by the Sydney Harbour Federation Trust to conduct some investigations out there in regards to all the reports, or hundreds of reports of people hearing and seeing strange phenomena on the island over many, many years. So that was a really exciting place for us. It's probably the most haunted place we have ever visited in regards to, haunting type phenomena. And it's a site where it really excites us because we can get repeated phenomena, so we can get things that happen every time we return to a place. So in regards to research and study of, possible paranormal phenomena, these are the type of places we want to visit. So we've done over 30, maybe even 40 investigations out there at the moment, and we have got some evidence that will blow people away. We haven't actually released it yet because I don't think we've finished all of our study and research out there. But some of the footage that we've captured from Cockatoo Island, I have been told by other investigators in the field, is some of the best, if not the best, paranormal footage they have ever been witness to. So we're really looking forward to finishing our research out there, hopefully maybe even being able to take people out there someday to experience it for themselves as well, and then being able to release our findings for everyone to see and get their feedback as well. So
once you do that, it would be good to get you back on the show once you do release that information. I'd be very happy to talk to you and go over it, like see it myself once you release it. I'm glad you are doing a thorough presentation of how you're going to present this, which is really good. The two top spots I've done, I must say, I've done Monte Cristo, and we got some weird stuff there. And the other one, have you ever heard of the Beechworth Asylum in Victoria?
I have, yes.
That place is friggin' mental. And they got me, I went there with another person to investigate that. And if you're ever down that way, I recommend Beechworth Asylum hands down.
We were recently in, when did we head down there? I think it was October, just gone. And we were meant to conduct some filming down there in Beechworth for a series that we're actually putting together at the moment. But things just didn't kind of line up. It all didn't kind of fall into place. So we actually missed out. But yeah, it was on our list, that's for sure. And in regards to Monte Cristo, regarded as the most haunted house in the country, I think I found just a bit better on Cockatoo Island.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I think Monte Cristo is haunted. I will definitely say that in the asylum are haunted, but I never say the most because there's always one better, as you know.
I've never experienced Monte Cristo, and there's a few reasons why. There's people down there all the time. There's been so much work done to it, so. I mean, it's a place I'll get to eventually, I suppose, and just experience it. But hasn't been a place I've been busting to get down there to do research because it's just been so much done and there's
but
people
so,
there.
Yeah, so many people have done that as well. But if you're in the neck of the woods, I'll recommend giving it a go. We had some weird stuff go down there. So if you're in the neck of the woods, but it's good because you guys are investigating what's in your neck of the woods. There's a lot of haunted places out there, so you can... You never get bored of it. There's always something different, and whether it's intelligent or residual, there's always something different going on and different personalities at locations. Yep. What's some of the evidence that you've got on the website that you can give a bit of a backstory to that you find fascinating in terms of impressive evidence?
Oh, geez, that's a good question there, but I have to think about what's on the website now. Gee whiz. I think going back to Maitland Jail, you'll find a lot of stuff on Maitland Jail on our website. It's just a place that is very easily to control. It's an environment there, you know, that can be easy for us to control. We can monitor who's there. Mm-hmm. We can monitor who's coming and who's going. And, you know, hearing cell doors slam on a, you know, granted, I'm sure that they do slam on very windy nights. But, you know, being able to hear cell doors slam when you know that there's no one in an area, hearing footsteps, hearing voices, hearing moans, hearing groans, they're all stuff that you'll be able to see on the website. Also, actual physical contact that we've experienced at Maitland Jail as well, which, again, has been repeated phenomena. So to give you the backstory to that, there was a prisoner there by the name of George Savas, and he actually killed himself in cell block 4 in Five Wing, the newest part, the high security section. And George had just had a bungled escape attempt with Ivan Milat, his good buddy in jail. I'm sure most people know who Ivan is. So they just had an escape attempt and it was foiled. And that night, the next morning, he was found hung in his cell and he was hanging from his doorway. So we investigated there one night, and this is where the American show, My Ghost Story, actually caught wind of us and wanted to ask us questions. In that particular cell, we were conducting some EVP sessions and doing some other bits and pieces. And I sat in the doorway where George had killed himself, or so they say he had killed himself. And I asked him how he had died. George, how did you die? Hoping to get maybe something on the voice recorder or through the ghost box or something like that. 30 seconds later, I felt my neck burning. Really intense burning sensation. And I told the boys who were with me at the time, I'm saying, you're never going to believe this, but my neck is burning really intensely. And as they flicked the torch on and they've had a look, there was a really big, thick, red welt that ran from underneath one ear right across my throat to the other ear. And it looked like someone had got a rope, a big piece of rope or whatever, and just, you know, put it around my neck. So it was funny that we should get that type of phenomena in the very doorway where a man was said to have hung himself, yeah? Went to the US and we told our story for the television show My Ghost Story. And they said to us, Craig, we're going to send a crew out to Maitland Jail. It'd be great if you guys are there so they can get some B-roll footage of you guys in the jail doing what you were doing. So whilst we were back at the jail again, they asked us if we could actually reenact the moment I had the red mark on the neck. So I went back to cell 4, George's cell, put ourselves in the same position. We've got a couple of camera guys from, you know, the big US production there filming it. I said, all right, action, just go through it like it was happening. So I sat there and I said, George, can you show me how you died? I kid you not. Within 10 to 15 seconds this time, I felt the same burning on my neck. And the red mark that had appeared originally the first time reappeared again. And it was pretty good confirmation for me that there was something there. And it was all captured. It was all captured on US TV as well at the time whilst they were there. See, and these cameramen who were... You know, they worked on a show called My Ghost Story, and they were up front. They're like, you know, we work on the show, but we don't really believe, you know, in this sort of stuff. Sometimes a couple of weird things have happened. Well, Peter, they couldn't wait to get out of that jail. They could not wait to leave, you know. So, yeah, that was something that we've caught on film that was very, very intense.
How was it for you going through that? And have you had other experiences where there's been a physical manifestation of something that does hurt like that? Like... I've had marks and weird stuff happen like that too, and you get taken aback by it. Sometimes you need to get the hell out of there and just try and compose yourself. How was it for you, mate?
Look, for me, physical phenomena, if someone is going to be choked or slapped or scratched or kicked or punched or bitten or whatever, be hung by the neck, it's going to be me. that's my thing. Yeah, that's what happens to me. So the crew have a bit of a chuckle about it because it's like, well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to Craig. We're all fine, you know. And generally, it does. If there's any type of physical phenomena at all, I'll tend to cop it. I would have to say physical phenomena of being touched is probably one of the most off-putting and scariest things that I think anyone can ever go through. It's one thing to see something. It's one thing to hear something. But to have something actually physically grab you or touch you or scratch you, you just can't, you can never explain it until it actually happens to someone. And it took me a long time to kind of, you know, from the first time I think I got slapped or pushed or something like that. You never get used to it. It's something that you never get used to. People ask us a lot about, you know, investigating, you know, haunted dark places. And it's, you know, oh, I don't know how you guys do that. Well, over time, you kind of build up an immunity to scary places because I know for Whisper and for myself, the curiosity, the research that we're doing overtakes the fear a lot of the time. All right, so we see something move, we see someone move down the end of a long hallway, we're going to it. That's our job, that's why we're there. What is it? What's going on? Let's go straight to it. Where, you know, if we weren't doing this kind of work, every instinct in your body is telling you to go that way, you know, get the hell out instead of going down that way. And over time, doing what we do, we get used to being in the dark. We get used to being by ourselves. We get used to hearing noises or, you know, little bits and pieces, you know. But physical contact, I think, is something that no one will ever get used to. And it just so happens that that's my thing.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know what else to say, but it's just something that I'll never... Being touched by something, unless it's happened to you, you just can't explain it and you just can't express the emotions that go along with it as well.
Especially,
sometimes you get angry. Sometimes you get really, really angry. You know, why the hell did you do it? What are you scratching me for? What did I do? Sometimes you will get touched and your emotions will just, you know, there's been times where I've been physically touched and I'm sobbing like a baby.
Mm. You know? No, I agree. And the other thing is, too, for people watching this to remember or listening is be careful to egg these spirits, entities, whatever may be there, because there's been people do this who have started out ghost hunting that have come to me and they've got their ass whooped. And it's be careful what you say and what you do and be willing to put up with whatever the repercussions are. In saying that, if you're starting out ghost hunting, watching Ghost Hunters seasons one to whatever is not enough, because a lot of people do this, teenagers and people in their early 20s or even older, and they go and do this stuff and they don't protect themselves in whatever way, whether it's calling on the angels or whatever people want to use in religious taint or not in terms of protection. I think people have got to really walk in their own power and be confident and protect themselves in a different number of different ways, because if they don't, sometimes this can follow you home. Sometimes you can get your ass whooped. There's multiple different things. Would you agree with that?
It's not a game.
No, it isn't. It isn't.
It's not a game. And, you know, I can understand young kids, teenagers being interested in it and, wow, let's hope that something happens. But, you know, like Nikki always says to me, be careful what you wish for. Ooh, because it might just happen. But in saying that, Peter, we walk a very thin line as well, okay? As investigators, don't forget we're wanting things to occur.
What happened, yeah.
Yeah? If there is something there, we want it to happen, okay? So it's this tightrope act of, yeah, bring it on, but at the same time being very careful about what you're asking to be brought onto you. And yes, they can follow you home, and yes, it has happened. So yeah, my advice is be very, very careful. It's all good to head out and, you know, to a cemetery and have some, you know, try and see a ghost and do all that. So I get it. I totally get it. I've been there. I've done that. But it's not until you actually get in depth into, you know, the actual field itself and you're doing what we're doing on a regular basis that you just sit back and you go, wow, this rabbit hole is a lot deeper than what I initially thought it was, you know. So, yeah, it's not a joke, and you know, we gotta be careful.
Definitely. One thing I'd like to ask you, and I've talked about this with a lot of people, not just in Australia but overseas. Have you ever come across a case or a scenario where, instead of it being an actual haunting in what people think, like I've had this happen, where people aren't actually being haunted by what they think is the haunting, but it's more of a interdimensional alien, however people want to term it, type scenario where they're being taken or they're having. And I don't point this out. I get them to realise this over time, over coaching them, seeing things for what it is, where there's a fine line between the paranormal phenomena and high strangeness that comes with being an alien experience, whatever people want to term this, because it's more than just alien. There's an interdimensional aspect. And then sometimes there's been people that have thought they've had alien encounters, but it's actually been a haunting type situation, the reverse. So it wasn't ET coming to see them or because there's very similar things, whether it's objects being moved, apparitions or beings walking through walls, electrical equipment playing up. This is what I found, which a lot of people hadn't thought about until I'd spoken to them about, hey, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about this type of thing in your own cases?
Look, it's been something that I have thought about. You know, the ufology side for with Whisper, it's not just ghosts and hauntings and all of that sort of stuff. You know, we will investigate, you know, UFOs and abductions, and we will investigate Yowie sightings and Bigfoot and Panthers and all of that sort of stuff. That's all part of the paranormal. That's what we do. I learnt a lot of my ufology stuff from a man by the name of Attila Cowley. Very, very knowledgeable man when it comes to ufology. Opened my mind and my eyes to that type of idea. Mm-hmm. But do I think that I've come across a case where it could be vice versa? I don't think so, personally. Mm-hmm. The guys, the other guys in the group might tell you differently. But I couldn't say that it has happened, or I have actually thought that in any of the cases so far. But you know, anything's possible.
Definitely. Have you guys been approached at all by a TV company to be part of a series besides what you've done already? Because I reckon if something like what Taps has had done, you guys would be absolutely great at.
Oh, thanks, man. Look, we completed a series in 2013 called Phasmophobia, and the makers of that show are Moonlark Media, who are also paranormal investigators themselves. Phasmophobia was a great little series. It dealt a lot with the psychology of people experiencing paranormal phenomena, and a really great concept by Attila himself, you know. So we did that, which was shown on, you know, community networks, I think C31 down there in Melbourne, and, you know, TVS in Sydney. And still, they're still replaying it. So I guess if you guys have a look on C31 or whatever, you can still see, you know, Phasmophobia being shown. In regards to doing big TV series, like you'd find, you know, Taps and the boys at Ghost Adventures and all that sort of stuff, doesn't interest me, and there's several reasons why it doesn't really interest me. When you start mucking around with, or you start delving into the television side, whether it be big production companies, sci-fi, and, you know, all of those types of networks, you quickly lose control of your content. Mm-hmm. Not just me, but the whole crew, we're very true to ourselves. We don't want to be forced to show material that could be misconstrued as paranormal when it wasn't. You know what I mean? We don't want to be forced to have to act on our investigations or during our filming. What we show on our website and series that you'll see us creating ourselves, mm-hmm, is the real deal. We're showing content that we want to show. We're not under anyone else's control, you know, or it has to be 30 minutes and you've got to fit as much as you can in 30 minutes. And look, we're going to give you 6 episodes, and if nothing weird or strange happens in those 6 episodes, then we're going to have to cancel it.
Yep.
That's a lot of pressure to put on a team, you know.
It is.
Telling people that they need to produce paranormal phenomena in a TV show is extremely dangerous. It's very, very dangerous because what if stuff isn't happening?
Yeah.
You know, if you're after a pay packet and getting paid and getting your show out there, then there's going to be people that are going to be pushed from the good side to the dark side and actually make phenomena occur to keep that series running. And that's not true to them. It's not true to us in the field. And it's not true to everyone out there. And all that is doing is making people like us look silly, you know?
I agree. And that's why those who watch this show and have been following my work, I've done my own documentaries and everything else, because that way, and like I said, the people, this is a good tip for some people if you get asked by the news or media, I will not do anything unless it's live.
Yeah.
Because if it's live, you can totally manipulate that back and go on, hey, you just asked this, I'm going to give you the straight answer and no editing.
Yeah,
so
it's very easy to edit into, you know, the way they want it to be seen. So, look, I'd love to do stuff like that. And for me personally, if I could make a living out of doing this on a full-time basis, I would jump in it tomorrow. I would absolutely jump because I love it so much. But I'm not going to sell my soul to television networks to do it either, because what you see with us is what you get. It's raw, it's real, and it's the way it is.
And that's important. Like, unless you're Taps and you can do, you know, we don't see half of the investigations they've done. And they've got the pay packet because of the following to go and blow an investigation where nothing happened.
Exactly.
And there's so many haunted places in terms of people that have gone to them that they've got the investigations lined up one after the other. Yeah. Where here in Australia, it's a lot different in terms of places you can go to investigate.
It is. And I think another important thing when it comes to TV shows is this. When I watch, I've had it up to here with paranormal reality TV shows. I've had it. And the reason why I've had it is I understand that they're for entertainment. I understand TV show and production companies are producing these series for entertainment. I get it. People want to sit down. They want to see the night vision. They want to get spooked out. They want to hear things. Maybe the possibility of seeing things. I totally get it. But I was losing track of which show was which because they all started to look the same.
Yeah.
There is only so many times you can conduct an EVP session on camera. There's only so many times you can, you know, set up trigger objects. You know, what I want to see and what I want to produce for people is something different. What haven't people ever seen on a paranormal investigation before? What can we produce that is going to blow people away? They're going to see it and they're going to go, wow, this isn't Ghost Hunters, this isn't Ghost Adventures. You know, it's about producing new content, things that have never, ever been seen before, because I'm over watching history of a site. Excellent. You know, this happened, and people were killed, and then you see them carry the equipment in. Awesome. You know exactly what's going to happen.
And then they do the findings.
They're going to break up. You know, they get together at the end, they do a review. Ghost Adventures was great when it started because they changed it up a bit. There were three boys by themselves in the dark, you know, a bit of provoking. They had new equipment that had been made for them. It was great. 10 seasons later, it still really hasn't changed much from that very first season. So it's all about, you know, I think there was going to come a time very quickly where paranormal content on TV will kind of die out a little bit, that it will, you know, just fade. And then it's going to take people like you and I and some other, you know, awesome people making content in Australia as we speak. Attila Cowdy from Moonlight Media, for one, and also Don Mears with The Spirit Level. People like them to actually change the face of paranormal reality TV, because the ideas, we've got to get new ideas into it. You know?
Well, definitely.
And bring things that people haven't seen before.
And I think one thing that needs to be pulled out is the ego in a lot of groups, because I've seen divide and conquer done through a lot of ego, where I think if the more we brainstorm and the more we cross ideas, the more we're going to come to some, like, I don't need to believe this is real. I know this is real from my experiences, and that's the difference between myself and a lot of people. I know this is real. I don't believe it. I know it's real. And this is where there's so much I don't know. I wouldn't even know 0.0001 out of a trillion percent of what's going on. So this is where I think if we pull the ego out and we just go, well, shit, I've never thought of that before, you've just said, you know, different takes and different forms of evidence. There's been different methods where I've gone ghost hunting or conducted investigations, and I've seen different methods I've never friggin' heard of. And I'm just like, I'm glad I was here tonight because this is something that adds to my understanding, to my knowledge, and another tool I can incorporate when investigating. Would you agree with that? Because there has been a lot of divide and conquer in the field.
Totally. I've found over my time with Whisper and doing this research that it can sometimes get very territorial. Sometimes you think you're fighting a bikey war because, gee whiz, you come into our territory looking at our places that we investigate, you're in for a hard time, you know? What a load of rubbish. Seriously? Mm. What? Get over yourselves. Seriously, get over yourselves. I understand we're all human and people don't get along for whatever reason, okay? I get it. Totally get it. Don't work with them.
Yeah.
You know?
It's that simple.
Have nothing to do with them. So this bickering and this fighting that goes on and, you know, we're bigger than you and we've got this piece of equipment and you haven't got it. Oh, please. You know, we already look like a joke to the scientific community.
Definitely.
Okay? You know, without all of that, we look like the biggest idiots sometimes. So you start throwing all of that ego on top of it as well. It's some of it is astounding. I shake my head every day. But it's all about sharing knowledge.
Yeah.
If we do an investigation, I will write a report, I'll write a full report on it, I will give it to our clients. If our clients say that we can share that, I'll put it up on the website. Obviously, I'll remove all the address and then I'll put it on the website. I do that so that everyone can kind of see what we've done, how we've done it, and the results that we've gained from it. And I'll do that with every investigation. The thing that annoys me greatly is, you know, it's about ego when people start saying, we're going to investigate this place. It's never been investigated before and we're going to be the only team that can do it. Awesome, guys. Well done on getting the site. Congratulations. That's it. You never hear anything else. You see some photos of them there, you know, the big hero shot out the front, all of that sort of stuff. Excellent. Great. But where's the reports to go? I want to know about the place.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn there? What did you do? What worked for you? What didn't work for you? So I know it's about ego for me when I start hearing all of this gloating and bloating about everywhere that we're going to get into and you're not, but nothing else comes with it. And, you know, for me personally, if we're going to be treated as part of a scientific community, which I think we are, there's no reason why we shouldn't be, then we need to start producing this documentation. We need to start showing people what we've done, why we did it, what the results were. If you came away with nothing, you came away with nothing. Doesn't mean there's nothing there. It just means on that particular occasion, you didn't capture anything and that maybe the next group that goes there can learn from that and try different things. You know what I mean? So
that's it. And with networking, enough of people that approach it like yourself, enough people doing that and then networking, we can get, like, just like the UFO field, that you can get some type of database going on in terms of commonalities. For example, that's almost, or it is a form of scientific evidence where you went back to Maitland Jail to the same spot live with a frigging camera and the same outcome, which you did not ask for. You were going there to reenact it, but you got the same. Now, if that happened a third time in terms of scientific, they would go, oh, well, that's something right there. They probably still wouldn't because their head's up their backside, some of them. Because they've got a preconceived notion that what cannot exist, because they haven't seen it, doesn't exist. But I think what you're saying is very valid, very spot on, and it would be good to see more of a networking and a database, you know, some type of website or something where there's
correlation. Look, it's been something we've been, ever since we've been conducting investigations into paranormal phenomena, it's something that we've been trying, and it's something we do ourselves, but we're going to need help with the wider community to get it up and going. Yes. And what we are doing at the moment is we're doing long-term data research about paranormal phenomena. So, for example, ghosts and hauntings. When does the phenomena happen most? Is it a Wednesday night at 3 a.m.? Is the moon full? What's the weather condition like? What's the humidity like? Let's log this data over long periods of time and see what the end results are. See if it can get us closer to actually being able to replicate phenomena at a certain site. That so we can go in there with scientists and do actual scientific studies. You know what I mean? And so that's we're doing that. We're trying to log all of this data. Every investigation we do, even if it's just a walk through a haunted spot, let's log everything. Mm-hmm. You know, let's log everything, because I think to actually, you know, be able to log and data research the unknown, you need to log and, you know, data research everything that you do know. What Definitely. Do you know? What can you get from a site? You know, every little single piece of information, just note it down whether you think it's going to be useful or not. Put it down, because you never know, in 5 years from now, that might be a very, very important piece of information. You can look back on it and go, wow, this is all just, this all matches. Getting it now. I can see the trends.
Definitely. Like, I've done 7 books now, and 5 of them, I think, are about my experiences. And I'll tell you what, I've said to a lot of people, I would not know a large majority of what I know if I hadn't basically done it like in the diary format. Sure. Because I've noticed stuff where I've wrote the next book and I'm going, geez, this correlates with this. I've noticed around October there's a lot of activity.
There you go. Yeah.
In terms of UFO type stuff, but it's happening all the time. But do you know what I totally understand what you're saying, and I wouldn't have found that if I hadn't done that myself. Yeah, and you learn a lot about yourself.
Exactly what I'm talking about, and that's exactly what the paranormal community needs to start doing if we're going to be treated seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, don't tell us that you just go into a place and we don't hear anything else about it. Write down your findings, write down your reports, and, you know, let's work on this. So I can hang on. I'm going to flip through Peter's books here and just see. Wow, yes, that happened at that particular time. It's kind of matching up, you know. Even ufology and ghosts, are they connected? You know, when there's a flap, do we get more hauntings? Are Yowie seen more during a UFO flap? You know, what's going – you know, some people get caught up in their, you know, their bubble of, you know.
I research
ghosts, you know. But you're missing the whole picture that's up here as well.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've brought that up to so many people that we need to look at both things and sort of pull down our barrier and just go, let's look at what correlates here.
Yep.
I totally agree with how you've gone about this. Look, we've got to wrap up the show, but I'd love to get you back on sometime,
sure.
Even with the evidence with that you're talking about in future that you're going to release, or even just have a good old chat about this field, because there's a lot of cross-correlating type things in both UFO and paranormal ghosts, whatever they want us to call it, and then they're Bigfoot, everything. There's some connection here.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Now, everyone can go to www.westsydneyparanormal.org. There's so much people can check out there, whether it's EVPs or videos or photos. Everything.
Look, just really quickly too, we've just released a new series that you'll find on our Facebook page as well, and that I'll put onto the website. It's called Tailgate Terrors, and we're investigating all of the haunted roads and around the country as well. So, you know, people can really get into that. The Oatley Ghost Car is the very first episode of that one, which people might find very interesting. I know people rack their brains about the whole idea of how is an object haunted, you know. But yeah, we're going to be showing some really, really cool stuff that we just want to share with everyone. So yeah, get on, have a look.
Absolutely awesome. Craig Powell, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we talk soon, mate.
Yeah, let's do it. Hey, it's been fun.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. Thanks.